ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया। The next example given by the Avadhut Brahmana to Prahlad Maharaj, from which we can take good instruction, is that of an elephant. Now, you wouldn't think that you'd take instruction from an elephant. Not exactly that we're going to sit down in front of an elephant and wait for him to speak Bhagavad Gita to us. So, as we have in the temples, the elephant comes and puts the end of his trunk on your head, and you give him some rupees, and he passes it up to the mahout. But we can learn from the elephant. Think of an elephant, a big elephant, big bull elephant, very powerful. Sometimes the elephants, they're going in a temple procession, and one of them goes wild and just runs around and just kills people. Just very easy thing for an elephant to kill people. Therefore, we're warned about the mad elephant offense. If you're up against a mad elephant, if you have a cool head and a gun, a loaded gun, and you know what you're doing with it, you could possibly shoot the elephant. Otherwise, very, very dangerous. So that elephant, who is so powerful physically, such elephants, they're used in wars, in battles, previously. Here in India, the elephant was a great advantage for a king to have many elephants with trained for fighting. But you can't just have any old elephant. You can't take a domesticated elephant. They're not aggressive enough to be utilized in battle. So you have to capture a wild elephant. Such an elephant can be trained. It's a big job to somewhat domesticate them and train them to fight in battle. And they have to be drunk also. You have to give them lots of rough rice wine. And then they can be utilized in battle. How do you catch an elephant, a wild elephant, first of all? How do you do that? What's the system? So if any of you decide you want to catch a wild elephant, this is the system. Nowadays they'd shoot with sedatives. That's how they'd capture a wild elephant. But then it becomes a problem how to get the elephant from A to B still. Anyway, the system in former times was that you see, they go to the part of the jungle where elephants roam and dig a big pit, big enough for an elephant to get trapped in. Cover it with branches and leaves so that it can't be seen. Then you have to have a trained female elephant who's trained to attract the bull elephant, and then when he gets enthusiastic and starts coming after her, she runs away. And she runs on the path where the pit is, but she goes round it because she's trained. And the bull elephant goes right onto it and falls right into it. Now the elephant is trapped. So what do we learn from this? Well, if you ever take birth as a bull elephant and someone wants to trap you, you might remember that. But I don't think so, because... Well, this is the point. I was going to say, because we are ensnared by the charms of attractive females, even though we know we shouldn't be, that it's detrimental to our real self-interest. So that's the point that the Avadhut is making here. That even someone may... an elephant is so powerful that by normal means he can't be captured. But he becomes captured when his senses go out of control. Not that an elephant ever thinks of controlling his senses, but he becomes captured by the desire to enjoy the female. So in the same way, one may be very strong in spiritual advancement, but can be captured by Maya in the form of an attractive female. Srila Prabhupada, in one of his purports, gave the example of Julius Caesar, who was so powerful, he was controlling a huge empire. Politically very powerful, and no doubt he was physically very strong also, because in those days they wouldn't have some skinny wimp as an emperor. He'd have to be physically strong and able to physically fight. But simply, Srila Prabhupada wrote, by the moving of the eyebrows of a Cleopatra. You probably haven't heard of Cleopatra. Don't worry, you didn't lose anything. But she was a queen of renowned beauty who charmed Cleopatra. Sorry, charmed Caesar. He was so powerful, but he came under the control of such a woman who, in terms of physical power, presumably Caesar could just pick her up and throw her around. The male body is generally stronger than the female body in humans. But she dominated him. It's a common example given that a king may be very powerful, feared. He should be feared. A king should be feared by the citizens. Loved and feared. Feared, that means if you do anything wrong, he's going to punish you. But the same king, when he goes into the inner quarters, that means where the queens live, then he becomes completely under their control. So we are warned, don't be attracted by the female form. Otherwise all the strength that one, spiritual strength that one can accrue by practicing sadhana can be lost. And this is... lost very easily. Lost very easily. And this advice is not only for brahmacharis and sannyasis, but also for grihasthas. That they're living with a female, but should see her as another servant of Krishna, not for me to enjoy. We are to serve Krishna together. And according to the situation that I'm in, the body that I have been placed in due to my previous activities, I am meant to supervise this other soul who's in the body of a female, but that dominance is not meant for exploitation. So remember the elephant. so big, so powerful, but his mind is lost to the beauty of a female elephant, cow elephant. We don't see elephants as beautiful. There might be some perverted human who becomes sexually attracted to elephants. Anything is possible, especially in the modern age. But we don't see as beautiful. But they see. The male elephant is attracted. Don't become attracted. Probably to the elephant, they don't see the beautiful female human as any more beautiful than we see a female elephant. That's how Maya works. The next example given. Collecting honey. There are people who collect honey. They go in the forest. Probably around here there are people who, because it's a forest area around here, so there are probably people who go in the forest and they find bees' nests and they plunder the honey. That goes on in different parts of India. People come around selling honey, especially in forest areas. The Sundarban in South Bengal, both in West Bengal and Bangladesh. Big forest area, so a lot of honey is produced in that area. So what are we to learn from this? The bees work very hard to produce that honey. And someone comes and takes it away. Now, it's a bit unusual, this one. The moral of the story, or what the avadhut gives as an understanding of this, is that the sannyasis and brahmacharis are entitled to take from the grihasthas. The grihasthas work very hard, and they accumulate material objects, and the brahmacharis and sannyasis are allowed to take it away. Not that you, having heard this, will walk into the house next door and start loading the TV and everything in your van. Not like that. The brahmacharis and sannyasis should not be greedy for any of the possessions of the grihasthas, but they may take them and use them in Krishna's service, and the grihasthas should be pleased for that. Mostly, they're not very pleased. If they give a little, they'll be pleased. If they give a lot, they may not be pleased, if they're asked to give a lot. But anyway, the point is the brahmacharis and sannyasis, they don't work for a living for themselves, but they are maintained by those who do work hard for a living. Again, the brahmacharis and sannyasis should not take it as a license to live luxuriously. If they take, they use it for Krishna's service. And part of Krishna's service is maintaining their own bodies, but not in luxury. Should live simply. Now, another example is that of the deer. We just heard how the elephant is trapped by sexual desire. So the deer becomes entranced by the hunter who plays a sound on his horn or sing very sweetly. It seems that deer are very much musically inclined. So some little music is played, and the deer becomes attracted and stands still and starts listening. Oh, very nice. Normally deer are very afraid. Not always, it depends. At Gita Nagari, that farm that Srila Prabhupada founded in Pennsylvania in America, I think I went there once only, as far as I remember. And deer from the nearby forests would come and eat from the hands of the devotees, including myself. Because they know that these people won't harm us, but I presume there are many people in Pennsylvania, if they see a deer, they'll get out their gun and shoot the deer dead. It's a common sport in America, I presume, isn't it? Do you know? People in the country areas, they go out with guns and shoot deer, and in the northern part, in Canada, elks, which are like big deers. In Russia, must be common, in the northern part especially. In the northern parts, that must be very common. People go out and shoot deer, and then they skin them and eat them, is it? So generally, they're very afraid. We see here in India also, I don't know if they have down here in the south, Nilgai. Do you have that in the south? It's a Hindi term, Nilgai, which means a blue cow, but actually it's a kind of deer. You'll see them on Govardhan many times. Have you seen them in your area? Do they have them? I don't think they're in South India, only in North India. They're quite common in the rural areas in North India. In Bengal also, they don't have them. I've seen in Govardhan and Gujarat many times. But as soon as they see you, they can be right on the other, long way on the other side of the field. They'll run away. They're really afraid. So how does a hunter get close to the deer? Now we're talking about the hunter in the days of bows and arrows, and the hunters with bows and arrows, they're not like Arjuna with bows and arrows, who can do all kinds of amazing things with mantras, and they're just simple bows and arrows. Nowadays with a gun, you have a long-range gun and sights, but how do you get close enough to the deer? Because they'll just run away. So that's what you do. Play a little music on your horn or flute. The deer comes and just stands there. Thinks, oh, nice concert. Very nice. Meantime, the hunter puts down his horn, picks up the bow and arrows, and shoots the deer. So, the moral of the story, as the Avadhut says, don't become attracted to mundane music. Previously, music was it was not very common, because you'd actually have to play the instruments. People would sing to themselves as they go here and there. Farmers plowing the fields, boatmen crossing a river, they would sing as they went. Ferryman. Otherwise, to have actual music, that was quite a treat. Nowadays, people have it all the time. You can get any kind of music you like right from the internet, right? You can hear all the time. So it was quite something special previously. Anyway, the warning is don't be attracted to mundane music, especially the Avadhut warns the singing and dancing of beautiful women. So this one overlaps with the elephant example. The female form is attractive to the male, and the female voice also, especially in singing, is attractive. So if we listen to bhajan and kirtan, and just because we like the sweet singing of the voice, even if it's a male voice, that's deviating from the principle of Krishna, pleasing Krishna. And especially that danger is always there. Even if a woman sings very nicely and devotionally, the danger is there that a man may become subtly attracted. He may not even notice it himself in his consciousness toward that woman. Therefore, generally, I recommend that women, devotees, they sing, they dance, they do everything in their own groups, as is traditional here in India, that women will have their own Mahila Satsang, women's spiritual get-together separately. Now, we've heard how by seeing the elephant is captured, and we're warned, don't be captured by Maya. We've heard how by hearing the deer is captured, and we're warned, be careful of hearing. Now we're warned about the tongue with the example of the fish. The fish sees something which looks very tasty. And indeed it is tasty, but it's on a hook. And the fish gets caught on the hook because the human who wants to catch fish thinks that fish are very tasty. He wants to eat a fish. So the fish is caught on the hook because he's attracted to the sense of taste. He doesn't discriminate, doesn't think, oh, I better check this out first. Is that worm squiggling around in the water, is that on a hook or not? If it's on a hook, I'm not going to touch it. But he doesn't. The fish has no such intelligence to think. And so he's caught on the hook. So in the same way, we have to control our tongues. Don't be attracted simply by taste. If we think some food is very palatable and we eat more and more, and then the stomach becomes packed and the genital becomes agitated. So the tongue is very powerful for pulling us into Maya. So don't cultivate the thought of how I like to eat so many foods. If we have the inclination, as mostly people do, for nice food, that can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. How? Cook nice food for Krishna. Especially in deity worship, there's scope for cooking so many nice preparations for Krishna. And the cook should always, instead of thinking, I'd like to eat this, I'd like to eat that, there's so many nice things we'd like to eat, just change it and think, oh, let me cook this, this, that, that for Krishna. And the whole propensity becomes changed. And then after the offering is done, one tastes to see, oh, has this come out nicely for Krishna? One prays to Radha that, please, you guide me so I can cook. You who are the favorite cook of Krishna, you guide me so that I can cook nicely for Krishna. Then it all becomes devotional, and the propensity to ourselves enjoy nice food becomes sublimated and purified. Next, guru is a prostitute. So if someone asks, who is your guru? A prostitute. Are you going to say that? My guru is a prostitute. I have 24 gurus. They're not all prostitutes, but one of them is a prostitute. This is the story of Pingala. Pingala the prostitute. She, at the end of the day, dressed herself up nicely and stood outside her house, all dressed up, decorated, perfumed, with the hope of getting customers. And every time a man came past, she would look at him and think, oh, maybe he's going to be a customer. And the man would walk by, and she'd feel disappointed. Then another man would come, and she'd think, oh, it must be this one. And he'd walk past. And this way the whole night went on. Men were coming. She was should get hopeful. The man when walk past should be disappointed. And then she started to think philosophically about how desire turns to frustration, and in her disappointment, she became spiritually realized, and she decided to be Krishna conscious. So, from this narration of Pingala, we get the saying, Nairasha Paramasukam. Nairasha paramam sukham. The disappointment can lead to the highest happiness. Or disappointment actually means that disappointment is the highest happiness. When we become frustrated in the hope of material enjoyment, then we become eligible for spiritual advancement. If we're fortunate, some people may commit suicide if they become completely hopeless. Some people may become violent against others. But Pingala the prostitute, due to some previous pious activities or association with devotional service, became inclined toward spiritual life, Krishna consciousness, from which we can learn, first of all, don't try to cultivate material desire because it will lead to disappointment. And then we can also consider that, let me give up all my material desires. I'll never be happy as long as I'm thinking, oh, now I'll be happy. Oh, no, didn't work out. Okay, let's hope again. No, didn't work out. And we go on like this throughout our life, and life after life, thinking, let me be happy like this. And then we're disappointed. And then another hope and disappointed. And then another hope and then disappointed. So let us take shelter of Krishna, abandoning all material desires, knowing that we'll never be happy like that. That is durasha. The hope to be happy in material life is a bad hope because it will never be fulfilled. So let us give up material desires, simply desire to serve Krishna, and in this way, like Pingala, feel actual happiness and a much better standard of happiness than she would have got even if her desire had been fulfilled and one of the men had been, at least one, had become her customer. She was lucky that none of the men decided to. Men moving around at night in a red light district means they're looking for prostitutes. So they must have found others who are more appealing to their lust. So we can learn from this. Don't chase after material happiness. Chase after Krishna. Then, like Pingala, we'll become peaceful in the heart and actually very blissful. Hare Krishna. We'll finish there, unless there's any question. No. All right, let's leave it then. Hare Krishna.